Welcome to The Positivity Effect, where paying it forward and doing something positive in someone's life can provide them with the confidence and motivation to do the same for someone else. Like a stone dropped into a lake, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. And it begins with your host, Dr. Thomas Retscher.
Hey, what's up, guys? Dr. Tom here, and you're listening to The Positivity Effect, episode number 34. Today is Wednesday, and I just want to go over a couple of things. Guys, if you're enjoying the show, please head over to iTunes and leave a review. It means the world, and it really helps get the word out about the show. And I'd just love to hear your feedback as well. In addition, if you haven't subscribed to the newsletter, I drop some serious knowledge every Sunday, and I'd love to connect with you as well individually. So please head over to positivityeffect.com and you could sign up right there on the homepage. Today I have on internationally recognized motivational speaker and coach Gavin Ingham. You can connect with him at gaviningham.com. He's the author of 3 books. He's spoken at over 1,000 conferences, and he knows what it's like to pick yourself up from your bootstraps and to continually try again and again, even in the face of failure. We have Gavin on again tomorrow, but today we're going to talk really intricately about his life growing up, as well as the path that led him to become a motivational speaker. Gavin dropped so many awesome bits of knowledge throughout the episode, so really pay close attention. He's super fun to talk to, and I had a great time chatting with him, and I really took a lot away from the conversation as well. So here now is Gavin Ingham. Enjoy. Hey, Gavin, what's up, man? Welcome to The Positivity Effect. So happy to have you on.
Thank you very much. Very pleased to be here.
Awesome. It's been really exciting. You know, we've had an opportunity to connect a few times over these past few months, and it's just really, it's been inspiring, you know, to hear your story and what you're doing now. I gave a little backstory before we just jumped on about what you've done. You know, author of 3 books, 1,000 conferences in the last 10 years. Like, you're really just making waves and motivating so many people. And, you know, how did you get to this point? You know, it's hard to just say, here's the snapshot and this is how I got there. I'm sure there's so much to the story of how Gavin Ingham in 2016 and what he's doing today.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think people often, they come up to you at conferences and they say, how'd you get into this? And it's a great question because there are so many different routes, but certainly for myself, it's been a journey that has been driven by a calling, really. And I think it goes right the way back early in my life. And I often talk about this, and I was born to a nice family. So unlike most motivational speakers, I wasn't born to people who were poor. You know, my mother wasn't an alcoholic, and we were a nice middle class loving family. My parents believed in education and all that sort of thing. I was quite lucky because I was intelligent and smart at school, and I was good at sport. I mean, everybody's hating me out there already. And everything was going really well. And then when I was 13 years old, I'd been on an athletics morning, and I'd come back to the house, and I was having a shower or something, and the doorbell rang, and I went upstairs, and my mother was standing there at the front door having rung the bell, which was kind of bizarre. And she'd rung the bell, and she was with the deputy headmaster of my school, and she gave me a look that she's never given me before or since. And she said, there's no easy way of telling you this, but your father's died in a car accident. And as I say, I was 13 years old, and it's a strange experience, which I'm sure some people will have had similar experiences. And really, it takes you some time to really get to grips with, you know, the fact that it's even real. And my teachers and everybody, not surprisingly, were very, very supportive, and they kind of rallied round, and I was let off a lot of things, really. And I realized that I could kind of carry that on ad infinitum, really. So for the next 5 or 6 years, I sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, twisted people to the sort of old poor Gavin type thing. And the upshot of that really was that I didn't do any work and I ended up at 18 when I should have had a whole set of nice A-levels to go off to a nice university with a whole set of really bad A-levels and no offers met for any of the universities that I wanted to go to. And that gave me a variety of choices, I think, at that point. I could go back and restudy, but I really didn't want to go back and be the old kid with all the younger kids at school. I could have gone to a university that I didn't really want to go to, or I could do something else. So I decided, right, I'm going to do something else. And I went out to work and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I thought about it and I thought, well, the only thing I've ever been remotely interested in really, other than sport, is, the police and cop shows. So I thought, I know, I'll join the Metropolitan Police in London. So I joined the Metropolitan Police in London. And, you know, look, don't get me wrong, it was a great experience, had a great time. The camaraderie was fantastic, but it was nothing like the professionals. And I didn't meet anybody like Harriet Makepeace. So I, after a while, I left. And at that point, I really didn't know what I was going to do. And I was sleeping on a friend's floor and I had no money. And I went along to a recruitment consultant. And I said, you know, what can I do with my life? And they sort of looked at me and asked me about my qualifications and my background, my experience. And then they said, well, what about sales? And I said, well, dear, I don't really want to do a sales job. You know, bearing in mind my parents had been academics, really, and they weren't really into selling. And so after sort of putting this idea off for a few weeks, my friend said to me, listen, you can't sleep on my floor anymore. You're going to have to get a job, you know. Go and take a sales job. So I went and I took a sales job and I was instantly pretty successful. However, after doing a couple of deals in the first couple of weeks, things went all wrong and I didn't do another deal for virtually 6 months. And I was literally at the point really of getting sacked and it not being the job for me. And a friend came up and gave me a book and said, hey, look, this might be really useful for you. And I read this book. It was a personal development book. I believe it was by Anthony Robbins, actually. And, you know, the book was great. But there was one thing I took out from it in particular. And that was that you're responsible and you can choose on a daily basis every day what sort of mood you're in and how you feel. And I realized at that point that some days I got up and I felt great and other days I got up and I felt awful and I'd come into work even on the good days and, you know, things would start well and then I'd lose a deal or a call wouldn't go the way I wanted or something like that. And I'd I'd get down and I'd let it affect my behavior and I'd be banging things around, as you know, much as I see many salespeople getting all emotional about it. And I realized, you know, actually it isn't the circumstances, it isn't the people, it isn't the clients, it's you. You choose. The other people can say what they want to you, anything can happen, but you can choose to stay positive, you can choose to stay motivated. And from that moment on, I committed myself to that and I started to get good results almost immediately and went on to become top salesperson. I got promoted to team leader, sales manager, sales director, et cetera, et cetera. And was very successful in that field based purely in my mindset on, yeah, you know, I had the skills, sure. I had some aptitude, sure. But what I managed to do was control my mindset. I then, as I was coaching other people and working with people around me, realized how powerful this stuff was with other people and how people struggled around these areas. And it's from there that I started to really develop the mental toughness strategies that I teach people today, both in sales, but I also teach CEOs, managing directors, and leaders of businesses as well, how this applies not only for themselves, but also when working with their team and when building businesses.
You know, Gavin, when you first started speaking, it was really something interesting that you said. And you said that, you know, I wasn't raised like the way you think your most typical motivational speaker was raised. You know, you say, you know, you came from a good home and a good family. And I want to talk about that in a moment. But before we get into that, I want you to talk a little bit about now, you know, what you're doing and how you really are. You know, sales has become a part of who you are. And you know, we talked about Tony Robbins' book, Unlimited Power, and how you're able to choose your thoughts on a daily basis and no matter what, you can always choose the way you're going to feel. And you're presenting that to people. But I want to talk about, you know, what drives you? What drives you to push hard every day and to really get up and have that motivation? Once, you know, you build it into your mind, but what behind that? What is driving you?
Me personally?
Yes, you personally.
Sure. Well, for me, it's about making a difference and about helping other people. It's about the buzz I get from when an individual, you know, you can be up in front of an audience of a few thousand people and everybody can be clapping and cheering and saying that was great. But what I really love is when somebody sends you an email or somebody gives you a call or that little story happens and someone just rings up and says, you know what, Gavin, I came along to one of your seminars and I was really losing the plot. I wasn't really going anywhere. And you just said this one thing. And it wasn't that it was something new, even. It was just something I knew, but I wasn't doing. And you connected with me and I did that and it made a difference. And here I am 3 years later and I'm successful. And I just wanted to say thank you. And it's that for me. It's that helping people make a difference and knowing that what you're doing is worthwhile. That's what motivates me.
That's awesome. You know, so talking about going back to your story, Gavin, and thinking about how you said that you didn't feel that you were, you know, that conventional, you know, quote unquote conventional. But if, you know, if you really think about it and that whole just backstory that you gave us, there really is a lot to that. And how, you know, I want people to really think about this, that moment when you had lost your father, it wasn't, you know, you think back and you could talk about it now. And even if it maybe sounds easy when you talk about it on the air, it's still a difficult thing to think about, but that wasn't like an overnight thing. You know, there was many, many moments and years and things that had to pass in between and a lot of mental progress and mental toughness that you had to build in to really become, you know, Gavin and who you are today, right? You know, it really just because, you know, you came from a great home and, you know, I like to say myself too, I'm blessed to have come from a good home. But when we think about your story, you know, it's really powerful and how that moment had really transformed your life.
I think that's true. I think people often look, I mean, I you know, particularly in the UK, they look at your class, they look at where you come from, they look at the opportunities that were made to you, and people are very quick to say, okay, that person came from a middle class family, it's not surprising they're successful. And they'll look at someone else and they'll say, that person came from, you know, a poor area where their parents didn't support them, it's not surprising they're not successful. And I suppose the point is that you can have the opportunities put in front of you and you can ruin them and you can fall down and you can never get back up again. Conversely speaking, you can be given very few opportunities, but you can take those that are available to you and you can do something about it. Now, I don't want to get into the argument with people over here, but it's a lot easier for these people than it is for these people.
Right.
I accept that, you know, but ultimately, we all have the opportunity to go out there and do something with ourselves. And from the point where I decided, gosh, I've got to do something about this, I took a sales job that anybody could have taken. You didn't need a degree to get in. You didn't need qualifications to get in. You didn't need anything. You just had to walk in, have an interview, and pass. And I was the same as, you know, 20 other people who started that year, of whom probably 15 failed. And why did they fail? They failed because they didn't keep their heads down. They failed because they didn't work hard enough. And I think for me, it's not that the situation with my father was unique in that everybody has challenges, and in some ways I think it's quite not a common, as in everybody's father's died, but everybody has challenges, everybody
right,
has
right.
issues. And the point is, it's how you then deal with them. And I suppose from my perspective, it was that I probably didn't deal with them particularly well for a while. Although I thought I had, it had actually impacted me and it had impacted where I was and it had impacted what I was doing. And I had to make the grown-up decision to do something about it and take that book and take that responsibility, because I could have just as easily read that book and gone, oh, that's mumbo jumbo positivity claptrap. And I could have done nothing about it and carried on being in the same mood. And I meet people like that every day. People who believe there's nothing they can do about it. You know, there's articles every now and then in the papers in the UK, I don't know about in the States, but you'll get some journalist who decides to write, you know, a series of stories or a story, you know, can you make yourself happy? You know, is it possible to be more motivated? You know, and these are all really, really interesting questions. But the bottom line is, motivation, positivity, it's a series of mental processes. And if you're not doing them, then you're doing something else. And you can decide to change that. And you can change that. No one's saying it's easy. And no one's saying it's not easier for one person than another. And no one's not saying that some people aren't predisposed, whether via genetics or whether via upbringing, to be those things, you know, because you could quite easily argue with me, well, hang on a minute, Gavin, you had a great upbringing, you had that positivity there, you had that kind of element of success built in, you know, therefore it was easier for you to get it back and sort it out. And I guess you could argue that, but then you could also have argued that I'd be even more depressed by the fact that I had nowhere to live and I had no money, you know. And I looked at myself and went, wow, you're a failure, man. So it is. I think it's critical. And I think everybody's story leads to where they are, but it's what you then decide to do with it. And that's what everything I do is about. It's about what you decide to do from today, from where you are right now, moving forward. There was a great piece on an old Jim Rohn audio that I listened to around that same period of time. And Jim Rohn was talking about education. And he says, so you didn't study at school. So, you know, you didn't put the effort in and whatever. But you know what? Education's free. Go to the library. And I thought that was a really great point, because everybody can go and do these things. Everybody can pick this stuff up. And with podcasts like yours now and blogs that are available, I mean, I even look at the amount of content I've got on my website or I've got out there. You know, you could go a long way to being very successful just based on the material that I've given away on my blog. And it doesn't cost anything. You've just got to read it. You've just got to think about it. You've just got to apply it.
Right. I know people can sit down and they can look at Gavin and you can see all the success, but nobody sees, you know, all the moments in between, all the struggles in between. Like you said, the moment when you didn't have any money, like nobody sees that. You know, the person that is struggling, you know, in their own right, and they're not happy about something themselves, and then, you know, they're projecting those emotions out, and that's where it gets difficult. But it's like, how, you know, how important would you say, you know, it's those moments when you have to be successful even when you're not successful. You have to be successful when nobody's looking, when nobody's watching, you know, when it comes down to even, you know, are you taking time, you know, it's little things at home. Are you taking care of washing the dishes? Are you making sure all your laundry's taken care of? You know, all these little things that add up in your life that once you are, you know, in the public limelight, that's, you know, that's what people really see, is all the hours and hours that you put into to make yourself better.
You're right. People don't see it. And I don't think it's helped by a lot of the mentality of today. One of my guilty little pleasures is our programs like The X Factor. I don't watch them all of the time because I don't have the time, but I quite like music and I quite like seeing people sing badly, but I also quite like seeing people sing well. I don't like all the stuff that goes on between the judges. I just like the singing bit. So I tend to watch an hour's program in about 20 minutes if I do watch them. But one of the things that flabbergasts me about all of those programs, and I know it's the media doing it to make a story out of it, but is the number of people stand up and say, this is my last chance. And you look at them and you think, you're 23. How is this your last chance?
That is
chance?
So interesting. You know, that's interesting that you said that.
It's just ludicrous. Even a 40-year-old, you know, you managed to get to this point. Why have you decided this is your last chance? Because if you look at, you know, bands like the Beatles, for example, they spend years gigging 2-3 gigs a day out in Hamburg. And they just worked and worked and worked and worked at it. At no point did they say, this is our one big chance. And I think one of the things that these programs have done into the psyche of people is people have this this sort of idea, you know, it's almost like Eminem, isn't it? If you've got one shot, one chance. Well, no, you don't have one shot, one chance. Okay, you might have a big chance. You might have a big opportunity and you might screw it and you might feel unhappy about that and it might get you down, and that's fair enough. But get back up again, get started again, because you know what? Another chance is going to come along. Another opportunity is going to come along. And I actually don't believe really it works like that anyway. I believe it's a whole load of tiny little things. I don't believe there's one opportunity that's greater than any of the others. Okay, it may look that way at the time, but actually it's the combination of everything that you've done over the last 5 years that gets you where you are. It's not that one presentation or that one gig. Yeah, it would be nice, but you know what? It's the sum total of everything over the last 5 years, 10 years, whatever, that gets you where you are.
You know, I wonder where that even started. You know, if you think about it, you sit down and you say, if you're mentally in your head, you're trying to achieve some goal, anything, and you're saying to yourself, you know, over and over, like a broken record, you're saying, I only have one shot at this. Talk about the immense amount of pressure that you're putting on yourself to do that. Right. Like, it's already difficult that you're, you know, the task you're probably trying to achieve is already going to be tough. But now you're saying you only have one shot at it. Like, if you do fail at it, you're going to be crushed by that failure. And you're not going to pick yourself back up again. But if you know that it's just a daily grind, and those failures are little, if you look at those failures as more like information to just help you move forward and pivot, then you're going to achieve eventually. And that's, you know, it's really interesting that you brought that up.
Well, it's funny. There's there's an interview actually on my website right now. I think it's on the front at the moment, but it will be somewhere easy to find whenever people listen to this. And it's an interview with myself and Brian Tracy. And Brian says to me right at the end, and it's probably like minute 9 or something like that, he says something like, what is it? You know, if you had one piece of advice, what would it be? Now, actually, I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something around activity and the importance of doing the right things and doing them consistently. And Brian said, and it's very similar, there's a similar opening to the interview as well. And Brian basically says, you know what, having spoken to all the millionaires and billionaires that he has spoken to over the years and met all the people he had, everybody would agree, it's your consistent activity that determines where you end up. And I don't think anybody could disagree with that. But the issue with some of this stuff, you know, you get the guy who has never played a gig, never been on a gig, never stood up, never done whatever. And then he turns up at the X Factor expecting success. And then the people who have been gigging for a while and doing things for a while, sometimes the press gets hold of it and they say, well, you know what, they're not the real deal because, hey, they've been playing gigs beforehand, almost as if to say you shouldn't have practiced. You know, you're not allowed. It's just ludicrous.
It's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is utterly and totally bonkers. But it does turn up in other areas of life as well. I think people expect success far quicker than is reasonably possible. You know, people overestimate what they can achieve overnight or within a week or 2 weeks, but they underestimate what they could achieve in a year or what they could achieve in 5 years. And you can look at that from everything from saving money to sorting out your finances to your relationship to losing weight to getting promoted at work to getting a band off the floor to having a small business in your spare time to running a successful podcast. You know, you don't just throw up podcast one and go, there we go, 50,000 downloads or whatever. And you could apply it, couldn't you? Because I mean, you could ring one of the biggest podcast guys in the world and you could say, please, could you promote my podcast out to, you know, your million people on your list or whatever? And sure, if they said yes, that would be an interest, a massive kick. And you could look at it and say, well, you know, that was my one chance. But that wasn't your one chance. Your chance was to create good quality, valuable podcasts week in, or in your case, day in, day out, until people sort of start to pick it up and go. But, you know, you could tell, I'm sure, great stories about the challenges that you faced in doing that and getting to where you are now. But it's those consistent actions that have got you there, and it's those consistent actions that will take you somewhere even better.
You know, it's interesting that you said that about, you know, if you're trying to get like, if we're talking about podcasts, just like one thought leader on that you feel is going to give a kick to your show, and you're, in your mind, you're thinking that's this one chance. You know, it's, if you think of it this way too, you're almost mentally in your mind, you're doing a disservice to the other people you have on your show. If you're only seeing a certain person as a person that's going to give a kick to your show, and it's almost like, you know, you're saying that the value that the other people have provided to your show is not as powerful. And it's like every single guest you have on your show, if we're talking about podcasts, everybody is providing value. And together, you know, from the guest and the host, we're just providing value. And that's how you got to look just continually every single day in what you do is provide value.
You're right.
You know, it's just so powerful. And Gavin, I want to ask you a question about failure, but we're at the end of today's episode. So guys, stay tuned, because we're going to be jumping back on tomorrow again with Gavin. So thank you so much, man, for coming on. It's been great.
Pleasure.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Positivity Effect. I promise to keep sharing inspiring stories with the guests every single day. I hope you feel inspired, and I hope that we stirred some self-reflection in you on topics like transparency, compassion, and empathy. Please check out the website at positivityeffect.com. Sign up for the newsletter and I'll send you some tips to get you thinking more positively. If you're really enjoying The Positivity Effect, please tell someone about the show. Together we can create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world, something that we need so desperately today. So thanks again so much for listening. See you tomorrow for another episode of The Positivity Effect.